Mark A. Simon says, Sports Info Solutions, always a pleasure. Thanks for your patience on this Saturday night. How are things with you, Mark?
Hi, I'm going to try to live up to Joey Amalfitano and Bill Lasky. It's going to be a challenge.
God, really? My goodness, that was fun. That was fun, I must tell you. That Joey Amalfitano can tell stories all day long. And he was, of course, a draft pick of the Houston Colt 45s and had some big games for them there. And
I'm looking at him right now. He had a grand slam off Bob off Elroy Face, and he also homered off Bob Gibson in his career.
Yeah, yeah, and his good friend and our friend Hobie Landreth, and he was the first pick of the Mets in 1962. He's a catcher, and Casey always said, "If I don't get a catcher, I got a lot of pass balls."
And Hobie Landreth hit the first walk off home run in Met history, and it was against Warren Spahn.
Wow! And Hobie turned 90 this week.
Yeah, so many good stories.
He's a good friend. Now, you mentioned, I saw on Twitter, something about Sean Dunstan and a big hit.
Yes.
And I had to look it up to see when he was with the Mets, and it was only a short time. But today is his birthday, Sean Dunstan's birthday today. So tell me about Sean Dunstan.
Sure. 1999, Mets-Braves, Game 5. Braves leading 3-1, 15th inning. Braves took the lead in the top of the 15th. And in the bottom of the 15th, Dunstan led off with what I believe was a 10-pitch battle against Kevin McGlinchey, and like each foul ball was like a torturous foul ball, and Dunstan hadn't walked in his time with the Mets because he had been a late season pickup, so he wasn't going to walk. He was either going to get a hit or he was going to strike out, and he got a hit, and that set up Robin Ventura's grand slam single.
Well, it's so funny because Ron Woda said earlier that Sean swung the bat, and Sean always told me, look, once they threw a slider, I was in trouble. But I think he was up 550 times and walked 12 times, like that.
Dusty's a really big fan of his, too, from 2002 and the home run in the World Series and things of that sort.
Yeah, I love it. Very good. All right. It's great to have you on. How are you doing in Pennsylvania, correct? How are things?
We're in basically a shutdown mode. The governor declared all non-essential businesses be closed, and we're just social distancing at this point. I haven't been within 6 feet of a human being probably like 5 days, I would guess. We're just trying to survive. I made the joke on Twitter as well that all those years of locking myself in my room and playing computer baseball prepared me well for isolation. So just trying to hang in.
Well, believe me, I'm thinking about getting the Stratomatic cards out again. trust me, I'm actually thinking about it. Something to help pass the time during the day. Well, you do a great job with Sports Info Solutions, and, of course, the Fielding Bible is out from Acta Sports. But there are a couple of games you wanted to talk about this week with us, and one was the Bumgarner game in Game 7, and you had some interesting insights into that that you could share.
I do. So if you remember last week, I came on and we went through the Lincecum no-hitter, and we did it in like this really elaborate detail, trying to get you some things that you might not remember about that game. And so you know that Bumgarner came on and pitched the 5 scoreless innings of relief. I think everyone gets caught up in that, and they forget about how in Bumgarner's first inning, he had an issue where there was a runner on second with one out, and Aoki hit a line drive that Juan Perez chased down. If you remember, too, it was a low line drive, and Perez had to kind of sprint for it a little bit, but he was in really good position for it. And the
that
reason that he was in really good position because the Giants put him there. And the Giants put him there because they studied the data and knew that Aoki liked to poke the ball down the left field line like that. So they knew that they needed Juan Perez to be in that spot. How did they know that? Because they used places like us.
Yeah, I remember that the ball being hit, and I remember him standing right there and saying, wow, that was fortuitous. I remember that.
And it was a heck of a play. Panic made a couple of nice defensive plays, too. But the Juan Perez catch, I think, kind of gets forgotten in all this. I looked at Bumgarner. So Bumgarner's the story of that game for Bumgarner was that he got them to chase. He threw 49 pitches that were out of the strike zone, and the Royals swung at 24 of them. So like half the pitches that were out of the strike zone, they chased. And that included Kane striking out to end the fifth inning after Perez made that catch, and then Hosmer striking out at the start of the ninth inning on a high fastball for the first out of the ninth. So you had those plays. 9 of the 15 outs came on pitches out of the strike zone. I've got one other thing from that game that I like. On YouTube, if you do the right like kind of search for it, there's a fan that took a shot with his phone of the final at-bat. And you see Sandoval make the catch right in front of the dugout and go to his knees. And he's got great footage. Paolo Sandoval almost got killed by the Giant players who nearly trampled him coming out of the dugout. Like, they came really close to stepping on him. And he was really fortunate that he didn't get a spike to the face or something of that ilk, because it was it's a really neat kind of camera angle to it, and it gives you really good perspective on just how close Pablo Sandoval was to being in pretty great danger.
Wow. Well, great insight. And Woe even said that Alex Gordon, Crawford had the ball when Gordon hit third.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think you can send him on that. I know that's been talked about a lot. I feel like you would have had to have thought that he had like better than like a 30% chance of being safe, and I don't think he had a 30% chance of being safe.
No.
I think he would.
Interesting.
And Craw has that great arm, or had that great arm at that time, that I think that he would have made a good throw there.
Interesting. All right. Now, the Larson game, the perfect game, 1956. What about that one?
All right. So we wanted to do, in addition to doing a Giant game, we wanted to reminisce about an old-timer of a game. And I was looking to go for something that would get you, like, from your childhood days or your really, really young days. And that was why I wanted to talk about the Larson game. Couple of things from it. There's a video collection where you can MLB Network's shown it. You can get it in a Yankee videotape collection or DVD collection that you can get on Amazon. The thing about that was that there was a lot made about how Don Larson didn't pitch well earlier in the World Series and then came back and pitched great. But the real kind of truth to that is the end of the regular season, Don Larson pitched 34 and two-third innings to end the regular season. In those last 34 and two-thirds, he allowed 2 runs, so an ERA of about 0.5, and 15 hits. He was allowing less than half a hit per inning. So he was pitching really well at the very end of the season. Another thing that people don't know about that game is that it was hard on the hitters in that game. You know how they have the batter's eye in center field? They took it out in Yankee Stadium to accommodate more fans for the 56 World Series. So the hitters didn't have the luxury of the black background. They were staring into a background that was fan-driven. Also, a couple other things. Mickey Mantle beat a defensive shift with a home run, which I thought was cool. And then my favorite anecdote about this game is that they interviewed Don Larson's mother after the game. Now, she wasn't at the game, and she was in California. She was they were from the San Diego area. Don Larson's mom never watched him pitch. She always just let it happen, didn't watch, found out the results afterward. She did not watch Game 5 of the 1956 World Series.
Well, I'm sure she's seen it since then.
You would hope that she had seen it since then, although it wasn't necessarily easily available back then.
That's true.
Yep.
Well, interesting stuff. This is great stuff, you know. Casey Stengel knew what he was doing, you know, and I didn't realize that statistic that he had just dominated baseball the last 34 innings of the regular season.
Yep.
When it came to the World Series, Casey, you never knew what he was going to do. You never knew. Would he put Bob Grimm in, Johnny Cux, Tom Sturdivant, Whitey Ford, Larson, Turley? You never knew how he would manage. He would today, if I wish that we could watch him manage today because he just did things. He was the first, not the first, but he platooned quite a bit. And very interesting manager, the great Casey Stengel. But, boy, good stuff, Mark. I appreciate you being on tonight. And I know the fans just have so much fun following you on Twitter, Mark A. Simon Says. And it's good. It's great to have you with us. And just be safe and take care of yourself.
Thank you. And for next week, how about try to get the fans to suggest a game for us?
Okay. All right. Well, let's put it out on Twitter. And I'll do the same in a game. Because when you break these games, you know, I was thinking about Bumgarner when you said 49 pitches and out of the strike zone. I wonder what his velocity was, you know, at that point.
His fastball was 92.
Oh, that's it. Okay, so great deception.
Yep.
Great deception. And I do remember that catch. I said, wow, what was that guy doing there? That was an interesting catch. Yeah, very good. Mark, thank you so much as always. Great stuff.
You got it. Yeah.
All right, thank you. All right, that's Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter, Sports Info Solutions. And, give us some suggestions on some games that he can look into and come up with facts like that. It's a lot of fun to do that.